Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Losswith. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So one morning over at Elizabeth's beach house, she asked me if I'd rather go water skiing or lay out. And I realized that not only did I not want to answer that question, but I never wanted to answer another water sports question or see any of these people again for the rest of my life.
Sounds pretty intense, Mark.
Yeah.
It didn't sound like a really relaxing weekend.
No, you know, it was supposed to be like a nice weekend at the beach, and instead I had to go to a place for exhaustion, and then I broke out of it, and I didn't even need to.
Yeah. Sounds like you had like an existential crisis there.
Yeah, it's like, and then my buddy has this 75-year plan, and then it's all about these robberies, and then I end up with this James Caan guy, and we have the most botched robbery ever, and my buddy goes to jail.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I still hate water sports.
Even water polo?
Yeah. I mean, listen, have you watched water polo? They're vicious.
It looks exhausting.
Oh, yeah, I get tired watching it. And then they're tugging and pulling. I think the worst thing in the world is someone to pull on you when you're like treading water. Seriously, like you're kind of so John, you're swimming, right? Levengood. You're on a floaty. You know what I'm saying? You're like, you know, you got a Coors Light in your hand. You're kind of living the dream. Then someone just pulls you underwater by your foot. What's worse than that?
That's awful.
Exactly.
You're like it's, dude, that's no good.
Yeah, there's nothing good. Like, I hate it when people dunk me on my head, but like, at least you see them coming. But like, some dude pulls your foot. You think it's like the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, dude, you know what? I hope that I panicked and healed him in the face while he was underwater.
You know, and growing up in Florida, wrecked any lake, pond, or wet substance for me. Because when you're swimming anywhere in Florida, there's like snakes, there's alligators, you know, there's the creature from the Black Lagoon, like there's mud.
You're basically dead.
What other wet substances are you treading?
I mean, sometimes it rains and I go outside and I try to tread in a puddle. I pull Leonardo DiCaprio and I just lay in a puddle. And I still get scared. I think alligators are going to attack me when I'm pulling a Leonardo DiCaprio and I'm laying in a cold puddle.
Right. Like, what's eating Leo Hoffmeyer?
Like, I don't think a bear is going to attack me. I think an alligator is going to attack me out of that puddle.
Right.
That's a very malevolent puddle.
I mean, that's Florida.
Yeah, it is Florida. John Lemmigood, how many puddles have you tread in the past year, would you say?
In my size, it takes quite a puddle for me to be able to tread it. So I was flipping through HBO recently, and I randomly stopped and I watched like 20 minutes of this movie. I'm not going to say what the movie is yet, and it was so lovely. And then like another day, and I tell myself I've really got to watch this movie from the start. And Mark's always really loved this movie. He says a lot of good things about it. So another day, I turn on the TV and I'm like ready to go to bed, and I catch a different 20 minutes of it. And it's still lovely. And I can't turn away the channel because I'm just loving what I'm watching, even though I haven't seen the beginning of it. I haven't seen the – and it's the movie Brooklyn.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Like, yeah, that – what's her name?
Saoirse Ronan.
Hannah and from Hannah and yeah. The remake of Let the Right One In, or is it called Let the Right One In?
No, that's Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, never mind. Wait,
she's from Byzantium.
No, wasn't Saoirse Ronan then in the original, the foreign one?
No.
She wasn't? Oh, okay. By the way, she's been in some neat stuff, right? And so I'm watching this movie, and this movie is totally, like, not my type of movie that I watch 90s Van Damme movies and action movies and weird foreign horror movies and other weird genre twisting stuff and Marvel movies. And this movie is just like so touching. Any 20 minutes that I turn on, I'm just loving this movie.
It's a good movie.
Like, I mean, I want to see it from start to finish, but like when I go to bed tonight, if I turn on the TV and it's the last 20 minutes, I'm just going to watch it. When I'm not going to turn it away. Like, I'm loving that movie.
If I'm walking around a store and I see the Brooklyn Blu-ray, I hug it.
Mm. Like, you just... But that movie, that call this a weird recommendation. It's like, I haven't even seen the movie per se, but I am highly recommending this movie to, like, anybody with a soul.
What it's if you just good. Happen to miss all the bad parts in the movie? And you just, like, you're catching all the highlights, you know?
I don't know, man.
You ever consider like, that to be a possibility?
20 minutes that I caught.
Yeah, you miss a 20-minute karaoke scene where she sings Old MacDonald Had a Farm for 30 minutes.
With her delicate accent that sounds lovely.
Oh. Yeah, for about so basically the first 5 minutes is cool, then you hate it, and then she really sticks with it, and then by the end of it, you're up clapping.
Right.
Could be.
Like you know that song Pump It Up by Joe Budden? Like, you're dancing around just
I
like that.
I love that song.
Exactly.
Song's from You Got Served.
Now, think of a little Irish woman singing Old MacDonald. Same thing.
Wait, can I instead have Saoirse Ronan sing Pump It Up with a sideways hat, but with her delicate Irish accent?
I think she would wear, are Irish people known for hats?
Sure.
Like a cap?
Yeah, because remember Far and Away when he got mad at Nicole Kidman, he's like, "Why won't you say that you like my hat?"
Oh, brother!
Because he was always buying the new hats when he was making money boxing.
Yeah, see, she wears that hat,
the bowler hat.
I never watched Far and Away. Does Tom Cruise have an Irish accent in that movie?
That movie's amazing. That movie is amazing.
Is it Far and Away Tom Cruise's best Irish accent?
Hey-o.
Yeah.
Put him. Try the beat.
Well, and it's got some real Irish folks too. Like Colm Feore is in it, if that's how you say his name. But like, you know, he's basically just talking.
Right. Jeez. Hey, go ahead. Finish your talk.
He's just too little to be Irish.
Who, Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't picture. Like, was the hat bigger than him?
He's a petite little fella.
Yeah.
All right. So I think now would be a good time to dive into listener questions. It just
feels like
rowdy and listener questions.
Speaking of small Irishmen, that is small in weight, Joe from Prattville, Alabama asks, if Conor McGregor started filming movies, would he suck as bad at acting as Ronda Rousey or worse? I just like to say it is not the opinion of Movies, Films, and Flicks that she necessarily sucks at acting if she's listening.
Now, yeah. I liked her. She was decent in Entourage, but she was really bad in Expendables 3. But a lot of that was the dialogue. Like, she got handed, like, you know, I think who's Batman? Christian Bale couldn't have pulled off those lines. So, I mean, she actually had some pretty good scenes with Antonio Banderas in Expendables 3. But I don't know. I guess no, because he would just get put in some action movie where he's a sassy guy.
Kind of like Gina Carano in the
Fast Six.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a sass. He's a Mr. Sassy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like, but I felt the same way. Like, in Expendables 3, every time she spoke, I'm sorry, but I'm blaming the movie, not her, but it was like projectile word vomit onto the screen. In Entourage, it was very pleasant. It seemed very real and normal. And
I think people just want her mad. But like, when she had some lighter moments with Banderas and in Entourage, like, everyone, like, if she just played a human being, I think she'd be fine.
Did she say anything in Furious 7, or did she have no lines?
She was terrible. But I don't
think I didn't even like the fighting in that.
Yeah, that wasn't even her fault. I don't think that was her fault.
And so now I don't know if he asked it for this reason, but Ronda Rousey is going to star in the Roadhouse remake that comes out next year.
Yeah, and she's in another movie with Tina Fey called The Do Nothing Bitch, where Tina Fey is like this do nothing woman. I feel bad saying that. And she teams up with Rhonda, and she learns how to do stuff.
What? Ooh. Yeah, I haven't even heard of that. I guess that's. I mean, if it's with Tina Fey, I mean, that's got to bring your game up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping.
I just hope she's not like real angry in it. Whenever she plays angry, she's not good.
Like, I do not think that Ronda Rousey is a good actress, but what I saw in Entourage was very pleasantly passable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think Connor would just play a version of Connor. And he's not going to be in, The Lion in Winter. He's not going to be in Othello. He's not going to be Iago.
They should just have him boxing people and asking, do you like my hat?
Oh, gosh. Sorry to all our Irish listeners.
Yeah.
We love your culture, and I've visited, and I think it's a brilliant place. And I don't even dare do an Irish accent because I learned it from Patriot Games. So I don't even try.
That's the best movie.
Oh, when you did that impression a few episodes back about not wearing a rubber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's where I learned my Irish accent. So it was from Patriot Games.
So I don't know. Like, I guess, Laz, what do you think about Connor?
It really depends on the role.
Connor McGregor's.
Yeah. It really depends on the role. I think Mark touched on it earlier. Like, if you give him the role of like maybe some drunk hoodlum, or maybe just some roughhousing guy in a bar, I think he would do pretty well. But if you gave him like the role of like president of the United States or something, I just don't think he has the chops for that. I mean, he's no Morgan Freeman for sure,
or Terry Crews from Idiocracy.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. Maybe he could be an Idiot. No,
he's got great.
Yeah.
So even without his inflated pectoral muscles, like, he just dominates the screen. He's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he could let loose in acting. Like, I don't think he has. You know what I mean? Like, you got to look kind of silly on screen and stuff. And he has his image. I don't think he would want to, you know.
Yeah, and his ego could work against him in any of many directions, because his ego could work against him that he thinks he's awesome and he's just sucking up the screen, or he'll be too nervous to really try anything serious.
Yeah.
And he'll be so careful that it comes out bland.
Like, I think he could be good in, like, Daredevil fights the Irish guys in that show. He'd be a
Make him a random bad guy in The Raid Part 3 or the next Ong Bak movie.
There we go.
Mm.
Sold.
I'm watching it.
Because, like, the Ong Bak movies, right, they had, like, these random bad guys who would never say anything. They're just like, your next fight is against Mad Dog. And it's, like, some white guy who looks like a steroided-up member of NSYNC.
You know, if you fight a guy named Mad Dog, I don't think he's that tough.
In Thailand.
Like, yeah, he's not going to be that tough. He's just going to be, like, squirrely. Like, when I picture a Mad Dog character, I don't think he's, like, muscular or anything. I just think he might bite you. Or, like, he might, like, you know, he just won't stop.
That's still kind of intimidating.
Yeah, but, like, I don't picture him being, like, muscle-bound.
Like, I don't want to fight crazy people. I'd actually rather fight the big, tough guy who's not crazy than the wiry, crazy guy.
Yeah, don't give me Mad Dog. Give me Big Hank.
You know, Mad Dog sounds like he's got, like, a... Mad Dog sounds like he's got a tribal armband tattoo, you know?
Which is what he had in what was it? Not Ong Bak or was it Ong Bak or the Protector, where he had to work his way up the building?
Yep. And he fought, yeah. And, like, give me Big Hank any day of the week. Like, Big Hank, he's tough, he's sensible, but he's not going to, like, bite you. Like, he'll go down honorably. But Mad Dog, you know, he'll pull a pipe out. You know what I'm saying?
He's also got his chain wallet. Mad Dog's got his chain wallet.
Yeah, he's like a beer. He has a beer belly. He has like a 36 hour shadow. Like,
36 hour
like
shadow.
He just runs at you. Like, you know how you're supposed to, like, you know, touch gloves and everything? He just sprints at you when it's on.
Yeah.
Like, you put out your glove to touch gloves and he bites your knuckle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Mad Dog don't care.
All right. So the answer to that question is about Conor McGregor versus Ronda Rousey and acting is Mad Dog don't care and he'll bite your knuckle.
Yeah, that's right.
like this picture of Joe Pesci, but skinnier, and hasn't slept in 36 hours. And just drank 8 Red Bulls. That's Mad Dog.
Sounds like a lot of cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, man. Give me Big Hank.
Big Hank. All right. Well, to totally change up the tone of that question, our second question comes from David from Tallahassee. And he asks, how did The Little Prince go from about to being released in theaters to instead being released right on Netflix?
So it's made $100 million worldwide, but Paramount didn't want to pay the $20 million to market it because they were worried about the hodgepodge of cultures in it. They wouldn't make their money back, so they just sold it to Netflix.
Mm. And, like, I guess with how the Adam Sandler movies and The Interview did, they felt safe doing that?
Yeah, and I watched it, actually, because of this question. Megan and I watched it, and it's adorable.
Like, it's like a 90-minute movie?
Yeah, and it's maybe 100, 110. It's like a sweet little thing. I mean, it's pretty – I think the themes are pretty shallow. It's more about like it's about following your heart, whatever. But it's just adorable, and the animation's good. The claymation's good. It's a very good film. I think it probably could have made 40, 50 million here because it's a very optimistic, nice movie. But it's also very European, very European. So I don't think audiences would have flocked to it.
Right.
But
they didn't put a bunch of things in the movie just that it could be in the trailer.
Yeah. And like, it's made, you know, it cost 90, which is nothing. I mean, the most expensive movie ever made was Tangled. So, for an animation film and now in this day and age, it cost 90 million. It wasn't expensive. So it made the 100 million, you know, Netflix probably paid 20 million for it. They didn't have to market it. And so, I mean, you know, with DVD sales, with merchandise, they'll make their money back on it, but they decide not to release it in theaters because of the $20 million marketing fee.
So Netflix bought this for $20 million.
Well, they've never said how much, but if they didn't want to pay $20 million to market it, which they had agreed upon, you know, they had to strike a deal with Netflix. So maybe they took a loss and sold it for $10 million. Who knows? But $10 million is chump change to Netflix. And this Little Prince has a ton of momentum. They're trying to get nominated for an Oscar. They put it in the theater for one night, so it could be Oscar eligible. It's a very popular, you know, very uplifting film. So it could potentially nab a best, animated film Oscar, which is what Netflix wants because they want to promote the fact that they have original programming that gets Oscar nominated. So it was a very smart marketing move on Netflix's part, but I think they could have made $40, $50 million on it, and it could have made a decent amount of money on Blu-ray. So I do think that, you know, by what Paramount's selling it, they made a mistake.
But they also got to make their money sooner.
Yeah, I mean
they got to make less money safely and sooner and with less effort.
I mean, I'm guessing they didn't take a loss.
Sure. So the dynamic of this, like, does Netflix do this now with these movies, like these Adam Sandler movies in The Interview, to up subscription rates?
Yeah, because if you think about it, all right, so let's say Adam Sandler, The Ridiculous Six, those movies, they probably had a budget of maybe $80 million, right? Now, a lot of Adam Sandler fans, the same people who are Adam Sandler fans made Paul – I'm not insulting people because I like Adam Sandler. But Paul Blart was the number one rented film, you know, a few years back. Maybe a lot of people – and also he's the number – like whenever an Adam Sandler movie comes on Netflix, it goes in the top 10 immediately in every country. So when people who don't have Netflix hear that there's an Adam Sandler movie four-picture deal, they're going to subscribe whenever those movies come out. So let's say 10 million people subscribe just to watch, you know, they for 1 month to watch an Adam Sandler movie. They pay the $9, $10. That's still at least $100 million, you know, at least $70, $80 million. So they're not losing money on these Adam Sandler movies.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. You know, I never really thought about the dynamic. You know, for what I wrote for my answer for this question?
Uh-oh.
I wrote Adam Sandler, The Interview, ... Ask Mark. and you like totally busted out of the gates. And that's why I just turned it into an interview of me asking you questions. Lazabeth, I mean, Mark is like our behind the scenes production guru. I mean, can you Can you add anything to that, or did Mark just home run that?
No, I took the same tact as you, because this is a pretty straightforward question. So I knew Mark would give a very straightforward answer. So I was just sit back.
Yeah, normally for our listeners, like, we wouldn't normally take questions that have a right answer, like a very discreet right answer. But I looked this up, and like, I can't, with my knowledge, without really, really researching it hard, I can't really infer and connect the dots as well as like Mark can with his knowledge of the film industry, you know, like the production level and everything. So because of that, I figured most listeners couldn't so easily look this up and get such a good answer. And that's why I took the question.
You know what's astounding? I think this is the first time in the history of the podcast that we actually answered our listener question.
Oh, no!
I think we should take some time to reflect on that, right, guys?
Yeah, we should take some time to reflect on that.
I'm going to meditate.
That was awesome.
Yeah, all right. Good. All right. Now back to our
complete. I now feel enlightened.
Back to our regularly scheduled programming. Mark, I think you had a topic this week. See, I'm still befuddled from that last answer. I'm just like, wow, we actually answered it.
It's like a listener asked 2 + 2, and we actually said 4 instead of pi x squared.
That's right. Ugh. Well, I just love that. I just love insider knowledge, and I like understanding these decisions, because it was, you know, I say it's big news. It was big news when Netflix bought The Little Prince, but it really wasn't. It was just big news for film nerds like me. So, like, you know, the casual person's like, man, what the hell is The Big Prince? And then I'm just like, holy crap, did you hear it? So I guess it is my week, but John is going to start us off the 96 week. Last year we did 95 before we did the 94. Now it's 96 week. So in one podcast, we're going to cover all of 96, and John is going to start us off. Living good.
So, yeah, we're going to do a whole segment just on 1996 horror movies, because that's just a great thing to do. And, you know, the 90s, when we think of horror movies, the 90s was not a very blessed decade. I've been getting some flack online for saying things like that.
What? Why? Who's been giving you flack?
Again, because you see, what people do is they're contrarian for the sake of being contrarian. And they're like, wait, what do you mean the 90s was a crappy decade, or 96 was a bad year for horror? What about this movie? What about this movie? I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm talking about the year, not your top two picks justifying the year's existence.
Not your two horror movies. Like, there's 150 horror movies in 96, and they picked two.
Like, I wrote an article, and from this I'm going to just pull out like 5 picks, right? But I tried to pick 10 great horror, the 10 best horror movies of the year 1996.
Not going
to
happen.
For one of them, I had to use a full moon direct to DVD release, because everything of theirs is direct to DVD, called Head of the Family, that was like this campy play on The Burbs. Like, and I love the movie as a cheap, campy, cheesy horror movie, but I mean, this is not a, in quotes, good horror movie or good horror film. Like, I had to struggle.
So I would say in 96 there's only 3 good horror movies.
Now, so do you mean 3 good films or 3 good movies, just to clarify?
Okay, then, all right, good films. There is two point four
good films.
Yes.
Well, honestly, wait, what would be your number one film horror movie of 1996?
Scream.
Of course. Now, in Scream, we did a whole podcast on that. We did a Scream on Elm Street.
But everything changed because of, like, literally everything changed because of Scream. And it actually sort of rejuvenated horror.
I think that's very fair.
But it said it very ironically, and then a bunch of movies copied it unironically. Like, it's basically a comedy, like, about horror. It's a meta horror comedy that's very, very, very bloody. But then movies were like, hey, Scream was popular. Let's put a bunch of teenagers in a movie and unironically kill them. Like, it's interesting how a satiric meta horror film that was inspired by Wes Craven's New Nightmare inspired movies that didn't get the point.
Totally true. I mean, in a wonderful movie with a great Before They Were Stars cast.
Dude, and Matthew Lillard and Jamie Kennedy have never been better.
That's true.
Dude, you'd think that was their breakout movie, but really it was their break everything movie. It just broke their – they didn't do much else great after that.
Bowfinger.
Well,
Malibu's Most Wanted.
Don't even say that to me. Don't even say that to me.
Matthew Lillard was an SLC punk. I love that movie.
All right. So 96 Horror. But yeah, so Scream, you know, exquisite. Very true. Great film. Would you say that From Dusk Till Dawn is a great horror film, great horror movie, or great horror flick?
I think it is.
For me, I'm tempted to go with great movie. Not great film.
Oh, okay. I like what Ebert said about it. He's like, this is one of those movies you might like or you might hate, but you won't be able to deny its crazy zeal. This is a movie that was made with skill, love of practical effects. And I actually, when I watched it when I was 14, it really sort of messed me up. Like, it really stuck with me. You know, I thought... When I was younger, I remember the crime spree that Tarantino and George Clooney went on in the beginning to be much more violent. And I watched it again. And it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I remember it being like the grossest movie. And then when it breaks out into the vampire attack, I thought that was like the grossest thing ever. But when you watch it now, you know, after I'm 34, I see a lot of humor in it. And I see
right,
a
yeah,
lot of...
Right, yeah, because whenever they stake them in the heart... The moment that they stake them, they basically explode into goo.
Yeah, and there's like a lot of, you know, the vampires attack one at a time. They're running around the background. But I think it's a good movie. I think it's well written. I think the beginning scene with Michael Park is the highlight, which I hate because I think the beginning is the best. I love when Mark there's a scene in the beginning where George Clooney and Tarantino have some hostages, and the gas station attendant is supposed to lie to the sheriff, played by Michael Park. And it's just a really good dialogue sequence. It's on Netflix if you just watch like the first like 10 minutes of it. But the sheriff, Michael Parks, walks in. He makes like a critique about cigarette smoking. Then he gets a bottle of Jack Daniels. He goes, "I'm gonna get tanked tonight," but he says it very Michael Parky. And, you know, it's good dialogue. Harvey Keitel is in it. You know, Cheech Marin was in it to save them money. He plays six roles, so they didn't have to pay six people. And I think it has one of the best horror endings of the last 20 years.
That really was a really cool, clever ending.
Yeah. I mean, fantastic. And it showed that Clooney could be a legit star. He carried the dialogue and action well. So I think... And that's part of my two films. I think it's a good film and a great movie, but it's not a great film.
Sure, yeah, and you know, it had a lot of neat, like you said, like when you look at it now, it's a little sillier. Like when I look back at it, it's like Cheech Marin basically turned into a vampire Klingon, and Danny Trejo turned into like the Incredible Hulk with this like Cro-Magnon brow and these huge traps, like a power lifter, and Selma Hayek turns into like a snake demon vampire, and I can't think of his name. He was in a lot of blaxploitation grindhouse movies.
Fred Williamson.
They made them all look different, which is cool, right? But you had Tom Savini in the movie and doing the special effects, but they made all the vampires look a little different, almost like they were their own. It's almost like, you know, vampires in different movies have their own looks, but all the vampires in that movie have the look.
Yeah.
In this, every vampire had a different look, which was kind of playful. And Selma Hayek, of course, does her raunchy clothes on strip scene. And it had a lot of neat dimensions, but then it had that the serious criminality, like with Quentin Tarantino's Daydream about Juliette Lewis talking dirty to him and she's a teenager. So it covered a lot of interest in Harvey Keitel's morality. So I guess I'll skirt the line between film and movie there. It offered a lot.
And what it has is it has some iconic shots to it. So you have the final shot. You have the Selma Hayek thing, the shot. You have there's a couple moments that are just burnt into my memory. And I watched some horror films like, you know, we watched Suicide Squad and I completely forgot about it. And then somebody went, hey, you watched Suicide Squad? 3 days later, I was like, oh, yeah.
Like, oh, it's yeah. like almost saying, no. Oh, wait, I did.
Oh, yeah. And I just thought about the guy eating barbecue ribs by the window. But I think those were the highlights. And I think but it didn't have much of an impact on horror. Unless there were a lot of vampire movies after it, which maybe there were, because there was Dracula 2000.
Not then, but wasn't it just a year and a half ago that they started the Dusk Till Dawn series?
Yeah, but, oh, yeah, well, I mean, if you think about Fargo from Dusk Till Dawn, Scream, they all have television shows right now. So,
I guess not Fargo, but Scream and Dusk Till Dawn both have multiple sequels.
Yeah, and, yeah, well, Scream had really good sequels, and From Dusk Till Dawn went to DVD, straight to DVD. But yeah, I think those are two of the best. But you know what I think changed the film industry the most of all these horror films? Not just the two of those, but other ones. One movie in particular set in motion three massive films 5 years later.
Is it a 96 movie?
Yeah.
Is it...
It was filmed in
The Craft?
New Zealand. It was filmed in New Zealand.
New Zealand?
The Frighteners.
Oh, that's right. That was a Peter Jackson movie.
I just want to read you guys something that Ebert wrote. And what did he write?
He wrote that I'm tired of Michael J. Fox playing likable schlubs, so I gave him this role.
So he wrote, the amount of work that went into The Frighteners, and appalling, anyone who appreciates special effects, computer animation, or movie makeup will regard this movie with awe. There's not a shot that doesn't suggest infinite pains and patience. Complex makeup was painstakingly applied to actors for shots that were then married to special effects in order to create a screen filled with gory images. But all of that incredible effort has resulted in a film that looks more like a demo reel than a movie, like the kind of audition tape a special effects expert would put together, hoping to impress a producer enough to give him a real job. Peter Jackson qualifies on the basis of this film for any special effects movie you can imagine, just as long as it's about something. His next movies were Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, and The Return of the King. So Roger Ebert in 1996, like, called exactly what happened to Peter Jackson.
Well, he's an insightful guy.
Like, this movie got him those movies.
So, you know, something that I really liked about The Frighteners was, first off, at the time at least, I was 15 when I saw this, but at the time, it was a little fun, jumpy, scary. Like, it had some scares, even though it was still very cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
And like Jake Busey was creepy as hell in it, but he kind of always is.
Yeah, wasn't 1996 making like decent actors really good?
Yeah, and you know, this movie borrowed, other than concepts that just sweep the genre occasionally, where you can reach and say, you know, you connect a lot of dots. Like, there was only one thing that struck me as a direct callback to another movie, and that's the movie poster and what they do once in the movie with the impression of the face coming through the wall like A Nightmare on Elm Street. But of course, in that case, he's calling back 12 years to an iconic movie, not blatantly stealing something and parading it as his own.
Yeah.
And everything else felt very original. This was this is what Bedknobs and Broomsticks was to kids' movies in the 80s. This is to horror movies in the 90s.
So, you know, so getting into this movie, you guys will know this. So we used to work at a movie theater called Lazarus, and I and John's cousin, Ryan. We used to work in a movie theater called Tyrone 6 and Crossroads 8. And I went there when I was 14 years old to Tyrone 6. And I was like, hey, one ticket for Multiplicity, please. And they're like, here you go, Junior. And so I got I don't think they said that to me. Wait.
We're just like, Nelly?
Yeah, so I got my ticket to Multiplicity. They tore my ticket. I think I said, thank you, sir. Have a great day. And I hope this job is fulfilling and your life is great. And I walked past the Multiplicity screen. And I walked right into Frighteners. So when I was 14 years old, I snuck into Frighteners. And I went and watched Multiplicity later on. So I didn't duck the Michael Keaton classic. But this movie has a special place in my heart because when I was 14, when I was 12, I was watching R-rated movies. When I was 14, dude, I saw everything. And I snuck into theaters. And, when I was 14, I had a lot more freedom. So I rode my bike everywhere. I was basically a feral child from Mad Max riding around the St. Pete streets that summer watching movies. And I just basically snuck into everything. And I remember sneaking into the Frighteners and thinking I was a badass.
Oh.
I don't remember thinking I was a badass for sneaking into movies, but
yeah, I sat next to like people that were on dates and ate their popcorn.
You ate their popcorn?
No, I'm joking.
Like that dude trying to pick fights in a movie theater.
Yeah, I was like this little 14-year-old kid with a mullet.
Speaking of fights in a movie theater, how about that the fight between the two teenage witches in The Craft?
Yeah.
Those girls went aerial.
I've been reading a lot about this movie, and I read a lot of Ebert reviews, and I want to know what you guys think about this. So in the review, he's like, what I've always wondered about supernatural characters in movies is why their horizons are so limited. Here are four girls who could outgross David Copperfield in Vegas, and they limit their amazing powers to getting even.
Well, no, I think that that's actually one of the few very uninsightful and short-sighted comments of Ebert, because they are 16 and 17-year-olds before the internet. They don't understand the magnitude of their abilities and their life, their dramas. Think of what's important to you when you're a teenager versus an adult.
I didn't want revenge on anybody when I was 16.
It's not about revenge. It's about the things that hold value to you.
So I would have scored free beer if I was a witch.
That's just it. It's the certain things that are on our minds when we're kids and the things we focus on when we're kids. So I don't think that's really a fair criticism from him.
I'd have been plowed on Zima.
Plowed on Zima?
Yeah, because when you're 16, you don't know any better. I'm happy I didn't become a witch when I was 16, 17, because my liver would be dead.
So these girls, right? Like I was talking about this on, what was it? Facebook and Twitter in the last couple days. And so I had someone tell me, like, man, I really had it in for Robin Tunney. Robin Tunney.
Yeah.
But you see, like, I was thinking back. It's like, I actually had a crush on all four of those girls. Neve Campbell, Rachel True, even Firuza Balk, who's the crazy one also from The Waterboy.
Well, yeah, she was eating alligator heads in The Craft, too. That was crazy.
I mean, yeah, she's just... But she's like a cute kind of crazy. It's the crazy you'd probably regret, but it's still a cute kind of crazy. But I thought all those girls were like attractive, interesting people in their own ways. And yeah, like they got a little carried away with the power and for immature reasons. But when I watched that as a kid, it never struck me like, why don't you go get rich or why don't you go do all these bigger magnitude things? Like
why don't you score some Zima?
I was like 15, and I'm thinking, you bring that love spell over here. Like, that's all was on my mind.
And Skeet Ulrich was in it too, man. He had a killer year in 96.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But, I mean, I love that movie. I love the fight. I like the consequence. It's 15 to 25% hokey when I rewatched it more recently. But, I mean, I really have a lot of love for that movie.
Yeah. I remember going and seeing it, and what did I think about it? I didn't order it on Columbia House.
I'll tell you one thing. I've seen levitation scenes in loads of movies before this and loads of movies after this, and this was one of the more satisfying levitation scenes because I bought the investment that the characters had in it.
Nice. Hmm. I think I would have made Lazavath float at the movie theater if I was a witch.
Must have been drinking a lot.
You would have made Lazavath float?
Yep.
Oh, you got the best seat in the house.
Lazavath, would you bet?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, we were talking about Zima. Like, do you remember, like, that Zima commercial where, like, for some reason you have, like, a bunch of kids or young adults legal drinking age adults like hanging out in the back alley somewhere. And it's really hot. And someone opens like a bottle of Zima and all of a sudden like a blizzard like rolls through and all of a sudden they're really happy. Like you think like one of the witches had something to do with that?
I liked how in summer, whenever someone would pull out a case of Coors Light, yeah, all of a sudden it would be like snow-capped mountains and giant women in bikinis running around.
Yeah, like I would have made it snow with my Zima parties when I was 16.
Sure, sure.
I still would have been a gawky, you know, what did I do? What was I doing when I was 16?
Were you hanging out in back alleys? Just like sitting on couches?
Yeah, actually, I was a feral little kid, yeah.
You were like boxing with your brother.
Yeah, well, when I was 16, I had boxing gloves in my trunk, and anybody who wanted to box, I would square off with them.
Mark, I would not have trusted you on the streets, man.
No, I was always in trouble, man. I remember one time my coach, I don't even want to tell him this, I'm not going to say his name, but he locked up the weight room, and I boxed three people in a row, and I ended up beating up like three people in a row in a weight room when I was 16.
Nice.
That's right. So I would have been a 16-year-old Zima drinker and boxer witch.
Okay. Could you have succeeded as a boxer witch against Angie Everhart as a demonic vampire in Bordello of Blood?
Only if Dennis Miller was cornering me.
And doing the commentary.
Yeah. Oh, Dennis Miller was doing the commentary. I could have outboxed. You know what I don't get is why do people awaken ancient witches? It didn't work in Suicide Squad. It didn't work in Bordello of Blood.
I mean, awakening witches, I feel like, is going to have a very plagued history.
Like, why? Like, listen, it's just not going to work well for you. Just don't do it.
That movie had some good gore, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, that was just a deliciously gore-tastic, hilarious, campy movie.
I snuck into that movie, too.
That was a Tales from the Crypt movie,
I feel
movie,
like,
right?
I didn't have to. I was 15. I could kind of buy tickets at the time.
Yeah, because you had a beard and you already had like 14 tattoos and you were
I didn't have a beard, but I had the long hair, so people just assumed I was older. They're like, no parent would let a kid get away with that hair.
There we go.
Lazabeth, what were you going to say? Were you going to talk about punk hair and tattoos?
No, it was Tales from the Crypt movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the last one.
Yeah. No, they made more, didn't they?
No, because Demon Knight, people were like,
this could be
that
something.
That was fun.
Bordello, yeah, of Blood.
They made Bordello
like,
of Blood.
I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I think that they're equally good.
Really?
Yeah.
But it didn't have the Billy Zane.
It had Dennis Miller and Corey Feldman.
But Dennis Miller, when he acts, like, he's Dennis Miller.
Sure. Yeah.
I liked him back then. I liked him.
But, like, every movie he did, it was Dennis Miller. Like, if he was in The Fighter, like, if he took Mark Wahlberg's role in The Fighter, like, he'd just be Dennis Miller.
Wait, if he was the boxer?
Yeah, he wouldn't be boxing. He would just kind of be in the ring doing, like, he would be doing verbal jabs at people.
I don't know if he could have picked up the pecs that Mark did.
Well, he wouldn't have even trained. He'd just have a shirt on during the fight scenes. Dennis Miller did not try in that movie. I think he was just walking by set one day. And, like, Billy Zane dropped out at the last minute. And he was like, oh, Angie Everhart's in this? Yeah, sure, I'll act. I'll try it out.
See, like, I wouldn't call this a good movie. I would call this a great flick. But, like, this and Dusk Till Dawn, back in the 90s, like, this was a pretty good year for silly vampire movies.
Yeah, Bordello of Blood was about an ancient vampire being arisen. And there's a club in a funeral home.
A bordello
inside a funeral home. And then Feldman and the other Corey have demises. And then Dennis Miller investigates?
As
something
he usually does.
Like that.
Right, John?
Yeah,
I mean,
I think so.
I would have just said vampires, bordello, Dennis Miller, and then boobs happen?
It's just basically, they should call it one-lining, one-liner. Bordello of one-liners.
Bordello of bloody boobs and Dennis Miller.
There we go.
All right.
So am I the only one, by the way, who saw The Island of Dr. Moreau?
Oh, I did. And I just watched a documentary about it, about how the director got fired halfway through. And he got full-on makeup as one of the monsters so he could watch what was happening on set.
So I actually have been advised today by somebody to watch that documentary. And I was surprised when they told me, like, you should watch that documentary. I'm like, you mean, I assume it's about the 1977 original. They said, no, the 96 one. Yeah. And I'm thinking, really? And they're like, let me just say that the director was a warlock.
Yeah, and he he got booted out, and he dressed up, and he would watch what was going on set. Marlon Brando had an earpiece in his ear the whole time. And that little guy that he acted with, the world's shortest man, he gave him a much bigger role.
Nelson De La Rosa, yeah.
And there's an actor in it. Oh, man, what's his name? Oh, gosh. He's from, like, Lord of the Rings and 300. He was supposed to be the main actor, but then he kind of got pushed out when Val Kilmer joined. And then Val Kilmer and Brando hated each other, so they never shared screen time. And it was just basically Marlon Brando eating Slim Jims and, like, wearing a white muumuu while that little guy played piano, which is a great shot because they had him build that piano. But it was, like, a mess. It was an absolute debacle. And the documentary is actually probably much more fun to watch than the actual movie.
Well, you see, I like watching this movie for now for nostalgic purposes. I didn't see it for the pod, but I actually had last seen this maybe a year and a half ago. And so Fairuza Balk is in this too.
Yeah,
so she's in two movies on my list, right? Ron Perlman plays one of the Manimal monsters. Mark Dacascos, the capoeirista from Only the Strong and a bunch of bad 90s, like, direct-to-DVD movies. He plays the leopard one.
Yep.
This is like a Zubily Zoo of actors who later got bigger.
And the production was so, like, problematic. There were actors that were only supposed to spend, like, 2 weeks there, and they ended up spending 3 months, and they got paid a ton of money, and everybody just got drunk.
I mean, this movie's production, it sounds like, and I didn't know this, is about as batshit crazy as the movie looks when you watch it.
Yeah, it's the director came back, and everyone knew he was there, but he was in animal makeup.
I mean, and just seeing Marlon Brando dressed like that, so he's wearing like this linen, not a daishiki, but this like linen pullover and this also linen scarf
and a hat.
Tied to the side on his head like a headband. He was dressed like a spiritualistic California grandmother.
Yeah, he didn't want any sun hitting him.
Like, that was such a weird movie. And Val Kilmer's character behaved a little strangely with some of the animal hybrids.
Yeah. like, he didn't want to be there.
It was such a weird movie. I mean, to me, this is in here is almost like a fascination flick. Like, this is one of those movies that I advise people to watch if they really want to round out their horror experience with, like, a couple hundred movies. Because this is just an out-there weird movie, and it's a remake of an interesting 1977 movie. I haven't seen the original in way too long, probably since high school, actually. But it's a fun little movie.
Yeah, and I would recommend this over Bordello of Blood because it's just so insane. Like, it's you know, you don't witness many train wrecks like this very often. So
it's true. Like, Bordello of Blood is deliberate insanity, and you can see the deliberate insanity.
Mark,
like, you see the deliberateness of it.
Mark, yeah. You say that like you don't recommend a lot of movies usually over Bordello of Blood, you know? I don't usually do this, but wait, I recommend you watch this over Bordello of Blood. Like,
so hold on. Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn or Angie Everhart in Bordello of Blood? Which movie do you recommend to a film?
Bordello of Blood.
I don't normally say this.
Yeah.
I don't normally say this.
Yeah.
But I got to go with Saoirse. I mean,
okay.
You know, but I don't normally say that.
Okay.
Like, you guys caught me on a weird day.
Was Brooklyn Oscar nominated?
Yes.
Was Bordello of Blood?
No, which, you know, which is a travesty because The English Patient won in 96. And I remember when I was 15 years old, I don't know how old I was, 16, 14, wait, 96? Oh, I wasn't driving yet. I don't know. But
you were doing something.
Wait. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
When I was 14. Oh, so actually, this I was talking about when I was 16. When I was 14, I wasn't in Zima.
Are you sure?
I just would have had the greatest bowl cut in the history of the planet.
So, Mark, but, I know you don't usually do this, but do you want to keep going the podcast or do you recommend just taking a break to watch Bordello of Blood.
Yeah, I'm floundering here. Let's watch Bordello of Blood.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back then.
I thought I was 16 when this year happened. That's funny.
Hey, Robert, why are we always playing horror games?
Well, because we're trying to look for the scariest one ever made.
Are we?
I think so.
Are we also podcasting about it?
I've heard that.
Wow.
I know.
What's the podcast called?
Ooh, I think it's called Horror Play.
Wow. That's really creative.
One of the best names I've ever heard this side of country bread.
Where can I find this podcast?
Oh, sharkdropper.com, of course.
I'll be sure to check it out.
Do it. No, do it now.
Sharkdropper. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. So, Bordello of Blood. Still stand the test of time there, guys?
Yeah, you know, I don't say this often, but I think it's top three of the last 20 years.
You know, Mark, for something that you don't say too often, I do hear you say it a lot. So,
like, you know, that was definitely among in the last 20 years. It's among my topless Angie Everhart vampire movies.
Sure.
You know, I don't say this often, but I think it's the number one vampire film in the last 20 years.
See, I knew you were gonna say that.
That stars Angie Everhart.
That stars and Dennis Miller being Dennis Miller. Right. I want to see Dennis Miller in a fighter remake. And he would have boxed me when I was 16, not 14.
Sure.
You would have wiped him.
Yeah, dude, Dennis Miller. When I was a feral child, 16-year-old, Dennis Miller, I would have been like a Mad Dog.
Listen, man.
I was not Big Hank back then.
Dennis is he's a lover, not a fighter. So,
yeah.
All right, Levin, good. I think we have one more listener question.
He would not have loved it.
Yeah. One more listener question.
Sure, Levin, dude. Good. This one comes from Josie from Las Vegas. This is a very long question, and I just want to point out that I'm reading this the way that I would read it. I'm not necessarily reading it in the tone that I believe Josie meant it. But
yeah, too bad, Josie.
So in Poltergeist, if the medium is really so gifted, why did she insist that the house was clean when not only is it not clean, as tons of corpses are floating right under it and the being is still there and so powerful that it has the ability to suck the whole house through a vortex? How come she didn't feel the presence when she was able to sense everything else?
Listen, we've never seen her house. She could be a hoarder.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. You walk into her house, it's just gross stuff everywhere. So she goes into this house and she goes, "It's clean." You know, like there's some cobwebs.
Yeah.
You know, you could probably vacuum. I see some dust. Hmm. But compared to my house, it's clean.
Come on to my house, my house.
And she's like, compared to my house, it's clean, baby. Someone said she's possessed. I went on a message board and it said she was possessed.
No way.
I read this message board and they actually gave pretty thorough answers. And they're saying she was possessed or it was a ruse and she was trying to get the people to swim into the light or some crap. Or she's a hoarder.
So I don't think that she was – so it's actually an interesting notion that she was possessed, but for them to not touch on it at all, like I feel – I don't buy it, but I like the creativity that went into coming up with explanations. What I think is that first off, the questioner Josie says, like, if she's so gifted, right? Well, who said that she was – so gifted. She's simply gifted in the sense that she can communicate to some level with spirits.
Wait, did you see her ad? It said the incredibly gifted medium.
But you know what I mean?
Maybe no, I'm joking.
But you're incredibly gifted simply because you're a medium. Yeah. Like, it's not like there were a whole lot of choices. She was probably the one medium that that one academic who was helping the family knew,
like,
who
lived
in the area, right? Because she was in driving distance.
You know, that makes sense. Like, if you saw ghosts, like, if you legit saw them, like, that guy's gifted. But some things could still be out of your league.
Well, yeah, like Estelle Lorraine Warren in the Conjuring movies. Like, she would get visions, but they weren't always clear. That even she would, and she would give those disclaimers that it's not like she's batting a thousand, man. And like Elise from Insidious, very gifted, but she fell into some traps set by these spirits.
No, do not slander Elise.
No, I'm just saying, like, she knew her power wasn't perfect. I mean, you know, like, again, like, in the, I keep going back to The Matrix, but in The Matrix, Neo saw the numbers going down the screen. He had no idea what it meant, right? But Cypher and all the other people who've been in The Matrix would say, like, oh, yeah, I see blonde, redhead, whatever. Well, they are, to Neo, what Elise is or a medium is to regular people. They see things Neo doesn't.
Wait. Do you know why they call them mediums?
Why? Media?
Because they're only pretty good.
Because they're only – that's right, because they're not awesome.
Yeah, like, if they could call them awesome-ums or, like, I like 100%-ums, but she's like, a medium.
or you know how, like, in some of these movies, the medium is looking for a certain spirit, and then they don't realize until later that there was another presence?
Yeah, like Mad Dog was there, and she didn't see him.
Right. Mad Dog could have been hiding behind another ghost, kind of like in The Conjuring 2, how that evil nun ghost was bullying another spirit to, like, hide.
Listen, so you guys know I know all the answers, right? This is the answer to this question.
Is it because you're a medium and a ghost tells you?
No. In the 1670s, there was a gentleman called Hank Medium.
Okay.
And he was okay. Like, he's, you know, you call him to the house, say, hey, I think I got a spirit. And he's like, yeah, I think he got one.
I think you got one.
And people are like, crap. Because if he said that, that means you definitely have one.
But he was not 100% because, like, he thinks, but he's not sure.
No, he could only do 1 in 10. So when he goes to all the house, I think I have a spirit. And he goes, I don't know.
Mm.
But if he went to your house and went, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go.
Oh, okay.
Right? So Hank Medium, he only saw about 1 in 10.
So did he ever pull a Tangina then and say, I can't tell? And then those people were like, well, I'm hoping I'm fine then. And then they just get, like, crushed into a vortex.
I mean, all the time.
Okay, all right, all the time.
But, I mean, he saved 1 in 10.
That's cool. So he was just like, yo, I don't know. Like,
And when people got on him, he's like, listen, I'm just a man who can see ghosts. Like, I don't lie to anybody.
It's like, I didn't tell you no. I said I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I've never lied to any. And listen, when I can't sense them, they're probably hiding in the corner, the sneaky bastards.
Yeah. It's and not Gina's my fault.
Just like,
yeah.
This house is clean.
Yeah, he never lied to people.
It's and not so my fault I was born with this not so great gift. You know?
Like, listen, I get 1 in 10.
Yeah.
You know, no one thanks me for the 1 in 10. They just blame me for the 9 through 10. Listen, an entire neighborhood got sucked into a vortex. I told those people, I don't know. I mean, did I run away quickly? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saved the Johnsons down the block.
Yeah. They're all
right?
Sure.
I hate it. Hank Medium was only a medium level medium. And that's why they're called mediums.
Makes sense.
So you know what? You get some wrong. You get some right. That's what happens when you order someone from Yelp.
Well, that's what happens when you get the only medium within driving distance that your academic aide happens to know.
Yeah, and they had to pay for her fuel.
Yeah, it's not like she was like, well, let me call the 8 media that I know. No, she was like, I'm going to call this one person who I know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you know what? She was a disciple of Hank. Medium.
She was a Hankite.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what the poster of Hankite is? Him shrugging his shoulders.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It was like that when I got here.
I don't know. You know, I tell you, man, Hank Medium is a national treasure.
Yeah. Hank is like, you know, I'm glad you called me. I'll do my best. But here's the number of a guy that's better. So
yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh, he's too expensive. Well, I'm Hank Medium.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Man. Like, you know, you don't call Steve Awesome because he's so expensive.
That's
yeah.
right. He probably has his own 800 number, Steve Awesome. Like,
yeah. You have to call a 9800 number to get
like 1-900-AWE-SOME.
Yeah, Hank's just like, I'll take collect calls. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like Hank's number is like your local area code.
He has
333-3333.
He has a Facebook page. Hank. Yeah, he checks it every now and then.
Yep. 20. Sure. Yep. And he works for Coffee and Biscuits.
Sure.
Because he's in the house for so short. So when he walks in, he goes, yeah.
Sure.
But a lot of time he walks in, he goes, don't know. You got some coffee?
Well, you also have to consider the fact that he also has like a main job. Like being a medium isn't like his real job. Because, you know,
Tangina is not. If Tangina needs gas money, she's not paying the bills with her medium work.
Right. So, what's Hank Medium's job?
He's a meter reader. So, you guys go around check the meters and the side of people's houses. I'm like, just you know.
Oh, time's up. That's why he does it. He's so indecisive that being a meter reader is the perfect job for him because it's fact.
Yeah, because, he could just tell you, like, exactly how much electricity you've used this month. And, like, it says so right here. But you tell him to, like,
there's
figure
no
out.
Guesswork in that.
Yeah, but you tell him to, like, figure out there's a ghost in here. I'm like, I'll try. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But he deals with, Hank Medium deals in facts and occasionally makes guesses.
He's a real American hero, really. He should be on a dollar bill or something.
a penny.
Yeah.
What's a coin that no one uses?
A farthing. A brass farthing.
Yeah. $3 coin.
The $3 coin, okay.
Everyone's like, what is this? And only 1 in 10 people know what it is.
Yeah. maybe he should get like a 1/10 coin.
Oh,
Hank Medium.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God! So like 1/10 of a penny.
Yeah.
Are we talking dimes?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, let's just go with the penny. Oh man, I think we've answered this question.
Medium on the penny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hank Medium on the 1/10.
So the
coin.
Answer is that Hank Medium is just okay.
Yeah. And he should be on the penny.
All right. Thank you to our wonderful listeners for those amazing listener questions. Sorry, we did answer that one question. That was weird.
Crap.
Yeah, it's that.
that yeah. was weird.
That's still tripping me up. But keep sending those awesome listener questions, folks, because we will continue to not answer them. Or, you know, we'll be like Hank Medium and answer a question, like for every 1 in 10, that we get. So.
Yeah, but we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. All right, Mark, okay. I think.
Every 1 in 100, like the Hank Medium.
That would just make us lows, right? Hey-o. All right, Mark, I think you're picking up the topic, right?
We breezed through horror. Now we're going to do some quick random awards for 96. And if you know movies, films, and flicks, we know we love our randomness. And the first award is the Best Hair Award. And that goes to Bill Murray from Kingpin. I think next to Shooter McGavin, he's one of my favorite sports villains ever. But there's a bowling scene at the end where Bill Murray's comb over just goes to extreme lengths. And it's one of the most epic performances I've ever. I think he should have been nominated for an Oscar. And I think his hair should have been nominated for supporting actor.
So, do you think even back then that might have been making fun of Trump's hair?
No, because that stuff goes back. His hair went to the side.
I'm just saying, like, because there were a couple shots that caught Donald Trump in some weird wind, and that hair, wow, is that longer than I expected.
But see, Bill Swinton, maybe Donald Trump watched Kingpin and mimicked his hair after that.
Could be. You know, also in 1996, Glenn Close for 101 Dalmatians had some pretty crazy hair.
I don't want to talk about Cruella De Vil. She's a piece of crap.
Because she made puppy suits.
Yeah, basically. She's terrible. I hate it.
Did she ever successfully make a coat out of puppies, though?
I think she did, because that was her job beforehand.
was puppy coat maker?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Ooh. I mean, it's not like this one day she went, I want a puppy coat. Like, she's been wearing puppy coats for a long time.
Yeah. But I don't know if she's ever made any like that.
I think
she was just buying clubbed seal jackets and stuff.
I think she clubbed a seal, then knit them in very long montages.
What kind of music is playing?
All right, and the next, yeah, what kind of music's playing? That like Jeepers Creepers. Where'd you get them?
Well, I was thinking hair metal.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Oh, who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Oh, it's so bad.
Cruella De Vil did. You know, that song is really messed up when they play it, because that's a terrible song.
Oh, you've heard it live?
Do you know what it's about?
No. Well, I've never listened to it. Do you know what
the song's about? Is it about a bunch of girls doing the Walk of Shame?
No, he's like, who let the ugly women into a club?
Oh. Now I think I like that song
more. Yeah. Oh, geez. All right, so the next award is, so when I watched this movie when I was 14, I didn't really see anything wrong with it. Like, I was a huge Natalie Portman fan, even though her first three roles between The Professional, Heat, and Beautiful Girls were way above her age, like Jodie Foster and Taxi Driver. But the next award goes to Best Weirdest Subplot Involving an Underage Natalie Portman Award. And in the film Beautiful Girls, this guy comes back for his 10-year high school reunion, and he's 28, and he becomes – nothing happens, but he kind of, like, really likes a 13-year-old Natalie Portman.
So weird.
And he's like, if I wait 5 years, she'll be 18. I'll be 33. That'll be perfect.
That's so weird.
But when I was 14, I didn't think about that. And then I watched it, like, I recommended it to a buddy, and he watched. He's like, dude. He's like, this is weird. But in this movie, Beautiful Girls, Timothy Hutton is like contemplating whether he should wait for a 13-year-old Natalie Portman.
Honestly, dude, it was even weirder in 94 when Leon the Professional was having his strange, subtle relationship with Natalie Portman as well.
Yeah, they had to edit a lot of stuff out of that.
Like, that was such – I mean, nothing happens. Anyone who hasn't seen the movie, it's not like something happens. But their relationship is too mature, even though nothing happens.
But he's like a father figure to her, and she likes him. You know what I mean? But then in Beautiful Girls, Timothy Hutton is like – and you know what? That movie's messed up because, like, you know, Matt Dillon, this is our F-bomb. He's like, why do we always fuck up the good ones? And, like, he's dating – like, Timothy Hutton's dating this really great woman, and he's like, she's a 7. I'm like, it's just a bunch of bros, like, kind of being jerks and ice fishing.
It's funny, too. I can totally relate to how you felt about that movie when you saw it the first time. Like, how you didn't notice how weird it was for someone to be like that. And I think it's because when we're young, we aspire or fantasize or wish upon ourselves maturity. And so, like, young girls and young guys, like, they'll see an older person who they think is attractive and think, like, oh, man, you know, I wish I was in a relationship with that person, even though the other way around it would be very weird. And now that we're older, we see the moral line.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, bro.
When we're younger, we think it's cool. When I was 16, I dated a chick who was in college. And everyone, like, thought, you know, oh, you know, high-fiving, cool for you, John. My mom was trying to find ways to lock me in at night. Like, she was flipping out when she found out. So, you know, it's like, it's strange. Like, I would get picked up from high school by my, like, 19-year-old girlfriend. I think I might have been 15 when I started dating her. And, you know, it's like, all my friends, oh, cool. Can you imagine, like, the teacher looking out the window? Like, who the hell's that?
Yeah.
It probably looked weird to them. So I understand this. Like, it's.
But this is like a 15-year gap. This isn't like a large.
Oh, no, no. But
this isn't a large high schooler.
even with the small gap, though, it's there's a clear moral line there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah, that's squirrely.
So, you know, I'm just saying, so even with that gap, like, that's a highly morally questionable gap. So now imagine in this movie, like, but again, when we're kids and we saw that at the time, we don't recognize that.
Yeah. I didn't think it was weird.
Like, at our age now, we could have a child that age.
Yeah.
We'd be straight up, like, threatening a guy if we overheard that.
Yeah, if Timothy Hutton was doing that, I would pick him up and, like, shove him in, like, snow. Like, he would be in trouble.
And I'm from Jersey, and I know about rivers, and I'd help that body disappear for you.
That's right. that kind of hit me weird. The next one is Best French Fried Potatoes Award. And I just think French fried potatoes has become sort of a phrase in the lexicon, and that's from the 1996 movie Sling Blade, won Billy Bob Thornton an Academy Award for Best Screenplay. And he actually made a short that got picked up. He made this movie, and he won an Oscar. And he was a stand-in. I worked on a Billy Bob Thornton movie, and I think he's just the coolest guy ever. Down to earth and everything. Just great dude. So I like his French fried potatoes. But whenever I hear French fries, I always think French fried potatoes from Sling Blade.
I wouldn't want to be friends with someone who called French fries French fried potatoes.
Oh, brother. What are you going to do with that Sling Blade? I reckon I'm going to kill you.
What state did that take place in, dude?
I don't know, but you got to watch Sling Blade, people. If you haven't watched it. And the next one is, we've done this podcast before, but I forgot to mention this, and I feel terrible about it, but it's Best Tall Guy Walking. And it is from Independence Day. At the end, when Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith save the world, there is a scene where they're walking away from the spaceship and they're just strutting, smoking cigars. But they're both tall dudes walking. And I think it's the best tall guy walking in the history of ever. But I have to say, Jeff Goldblum outstruts Will Smith, which I don't think any other actor on the planet could do.
You know, I think that they only got to sweep this award because Tim Robbins was not in a movie in 1996.
Yeah. I don't know if Tim Robbins is tall, but I don't think he could do the Jeff Goldblum. Like, so go to Movies, Films, and Flicks, 1996 Random Awards, and you'll see this strut by Jeff Goldblum. And, like, the dude nailed it. Like, he's outwalking Will Smith.
But, I mean, Tim Robbins is the same height as Jeff Goldblum. They're both 6'4 and a half.
Yeah, but he can't walk like Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I don't know, man. I've seen him in the Hudsucker Proxy.
That's a terrible walk.
Oh, it's a great walk.
Man, it just infuriates me.
his nervous Jacob's Ladder walk.
When I see Tim Robbins walking, I feel the way I do watching Brian Dennehy diving off a high dive.
Oh, that's just nothing but awkward. I feel like it hurts my joints seeing Brian Dennehy dive.
Yeah, like the only good Tim Robbins walking was in that Tenacious D movie where he walks really slow. And then
slow, cautious walking when he's dropping the prison dirt in Shawshank.
No, that's too slick. There's okay. It's like, hey, I'm hiding something.
Because it's deliberate. It's too deliberate.
In Tenacious D, though, he's like, wait while I walk over to you. And Jack Black goes, no. All right. So the next one is, which we have to talk about, because when I was 14, this movie was an absolute revelation to me. I bought Swing CDs. I bought it on VHS, bought it on DVD. It was probably my favorite movie of 96, and is the best usage of too many voicemails. And it's from the film Swingers. And so Mike, played by Jon Favreau, actually gets a number. He's really slick about it. The woman from Replacements, the cheerleader, he gets her number, and he's supposed to wait a couple days to call her. And so instead of waiting a couple days, he goes home and he calls her immediately. He leaves a message, hangs up. It's awkward. He calls again, leaves a more awkward message, hangs up. Calls again, leaves an even more awkward message. And then she picks up and goes, never call me again. But it is the most cringeworthy 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, watch the clip on the Movies, Films, and Flicks page, and you will just feel it'll hurt your soul.
I feel like for people who are our age or older, like back in the mid-90s, when pretty much everyone had an answering machine at home, no one has a cell phone, right? So you live by that answering machine. And it was like, if you came home on a Friday and didn't have any messages waiting for you for like what to do that weekend, like you weren't cool. You know, like it was like someone would brag, like I had 5 messages by midday Saturday for plans that night. And so like, and I've seen, so that was an important era, right? The tactful message leaving. I've witnessed people go through slightly less belabored versions of that scene. Like I've watched it and I've been the guy while we're watching the screen, while we watch Swingers and we're like, oh no, put down the phone. Like I've been the guy in the room, like, damn it, Stan, but stop it. Just, and you like unplug the phone. Like,
yeah, it goes so uncomfortable in Swingers. And, you know, I guess, you know, when I was 14, I wasn't like really driving around in LA, engaging in club life. But, you know, I knew full well about really terrible voice messages. And this scene just keeps going, though. Like, he just keeps – and you feel so good for him when he gets that number and he goes home and screws it up. Like, they play it brilliantly, and then they destroy your soul. I love that scene. Swingers, watch it. You'll like swing dancing. And Heather Graham is really good in it.
It's very money.
But, yeah, it's so money. You don't even know it. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, we have something else to jump into. I have a bunch of other awards like Best Emaciated Matt Damon from Courage Under Fire. I have Best Monologue Involving Water Sports. Let's see, what else? I have Best Jamie Kennedy, Best Usage of a Wood Chipper, Best Dragon Who Sounds Like Sean Connery, Best Evil Smoking Award from John Travolta.
I want to know, because I saw your article, of course, on Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I want to know how Barb Wire didn't get the best Barb Wire tattoo when Pam Anderson actually got a Barb Wire tattoo and Gina Gershon had one drawn on.
Because Bound is a better movie, and I'm a big.
But it's the best Barb Wire tattoo.
No, because like Barb Wire to me, I didn't like it. Like I watched Barb Wire when I was 15. And for someone to not like Barb Wire with Pamela Anderson in it, it's not a good movie. Like even but that, if even but if
it's,
50, but
it's
Bound,
the best Barb Wire tattoo award.
But like Bound set off the Wachowski brothers' career, and Gina Gershon was awesome. Yeah, they got Matrix because of this movie.
Oh, God, I didn't even realize.
Yeah, and so like that was a good movie, Bound, because Joey Pants was in it. And
Joey Pantaleone.
Yeah, and it was a good thriller, man, and it's a great fake tattoo. You know, it's a perfect tank. You know what? It's the best fake tattoo tank top combo I've ever seen in my life. All right. And the last one we'll do for the random awards is best wallet pizza. And that goes to Multiplicity, where Michael Keaton makes a clone and then he makes another clone. And then that clone gets overworked. So that clone makes a clone and that clone turns out to be a maniac.
Because the copy of a copy of a copy is just not as good.
Exactly. And this clone drinks pizza, eats spaghetti, wants to eat a dolphin, and he puts a piece of pizza in his wallet.
It's and wallet pizza.
And like there's so many like you know, I don't know why, but there's so many movies. I've seen thousands of movies. I've seen a lot of movies, you know. But for some reason the wallet pizza still like is in my brain. I've never shook wallet pizza. Like he puts a pizza, like it's not even like great, but there's a wallet. He opens it, takes a slice of pizza, puts the piece in the wallet, closes it, puts it in his pocket, sits on it.
I feel like I need to let my brain sit on that. That's, I mean, wallet pizza.
Like I just like that someone did that. Some guy on script, the guy who wrote the script. All right, so this is what's gonna happen. This clone, right? He's a dummy. So he puts a piece of pizza in his wallet. And he sits on it. Movie ends. Eat a dolphin.
Is the guy pitching this movie like Vinny with a middle school education?
That was his name. Vinny. Vinny Pants.
End of movie.
End of movie. Wallet. Pizza.
Where's my $1 million check?
You should call it clones with wallets and pizza in it, with pizza in the wallets.
I'd see that movie.
Yeah, but then he got fired. And they call it Multiplicity. So yeah, that's my rant about wallet pizza.
There are actually a lot of the other awards, right, that you wrote about.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't want to cover them all because we got something else coming up. But head to Movies, Films, and Flicks. you'll see some beautiful ones. I mean, you'll cry, you'll laugh, you'll read about best farts, you'll read about best John Leguizamo, you'll read about best regaining a memory, best surfing, you'll read about best USSR missile award, you'll read best hip movement. There's some great ones in here.
Sounds like a roller coaster.
I mean, it is, you know, and I don't say this often, but they're probably better than Bordello of Blood.
Yeah, oof. I've never. Yeah, you usually don't say that.
Nope.
Man, Bordello of Blood burn.
Blood. Yeah, yeah. You know, Blood Rain doesn't rain. Bordello of Blood doesn't rain anymore. I'm telling you. So, guys, I got something. I got an MFF podcast first.
All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did a podcast the other day with the Lamb. With great crew of podcasters, and we did a 1950s movie draft, and it was a lot of fun. But it took about 2.5 hours, and we were all pretty burnt out after it. So, yeah. Instead of spending a lot of time drafting and talk about each draft pick, what we're gonna do for all you listeners, we know you listen, we know you love our podcast, we know that like you tell everyone about it, you're texting your parents.
Watch everything we suggest.
You're texting your friends. I mean, you are jumping up and down clapping right now. You are not even listening. You pull over on the side of the road. This podcast has you so excited that you're two-stepping on the side of the road. And if it's my case, I have no rhythm, so I just one-step.
I didn't realize that our demographic was into two-stepping.
Yeah, I mean, I one-step. You know, sometimes
isn't that just stomping?
Yeah, but sometimes I lose a little track of it, you know? So what we're going to do is, we're going to do a 1996 movie draft. And Laz, I think I'm going to start. I'm going to go. It's going to be snake style. So Laz, me, John. Laz, me, Lev, me, Laz. It's going to be a snake draft. And we're going to pick five 1996 movies. Then when we release this post for the podcast, we're going to put a little voting thing on there. And you can vote for who picked the best five teams. It's just fun. You know, it's a cheeky little way to have some fun and do some votes. And I think it's just kind of a cool little thing.
And so to be clear, when they're voting like on who had the best five picks out of the three of us, are they picking like, I think that's the best group of 1996?
Yeah, you're not picking. I love Levengood, so I'm voting for him. You got to look, you know, Mom, if you're listening to this, I don't want you voting for me because I'm your son. I want you voting for the best five movies. All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Best five movies.
That's right. And my mom doesn't listen, but that's the best example I had. But all right. So what we're going to do is once we pick a movie, it goes off the board. And then we're going to have five movies at the end of this. And Lev, before you make your pick, I want to be able to pick it because I think I know what you're going to do.
All right. Well, don't you get to pick before me? Couldn't you do a steal? Or maybe you just don't think that's one of the better movies.
No, I love it, but I'm just not mean.
It's okay. No, you can do it as long as people know that I would have picked it. As long as I get credit.
I'm not a mean person. I can't do it. Like,
dude, this is a draft.
You know what I do though is like I'm really good at doing like the opening of practical jokes. Like, so I'll walk up to people and be like, "Hey, the elevator shut down. Go check it out." And before they run, I'm like, "I'm joking." You know, like I never let practical jokes play through because I feel bad.
But so you're cheating yourself.
But you know what though, man, I'm happy. You know, I was a feral kid who boxed, you know, who was crazy, but now I'm just too nice. So I'm not going to take your pick.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to pick five movies each. I'm going to put it on the website. Head to the website underneath the MFF podcast number 71, 1996 special, and vote for your favorite five movies. All right. And Laz, start us off.
Okay. So for this one, my first pick for my 96 All-Star team, I'm going with Fargo.
Oh!
Yeah.
All right. Fargo.
Lazabeth, I honestly thought that you would say Striptease because of your answer from a listener question like 10, 15 episodes ago.
Oh, believe me. It's it was in the conversation. I don't know. There's still four picks left, so we'll see.
All right, you can still get your Ving Rhames Striptease with getting rich from the Roach.
All right, so we got Fargo, and I'm gonna go with Swingers.
Swingers.
All right. Okay. And then Lev, you have two picks, but I think one of your first two picks is gonna be Birdcage.
It's the Birdcage. That was my first pick. Birdcage.
Yeah, I knew it.
Birdcage. Nice. Why?
I just knew it.
But why?
Because it's one of your favorite films.
It is one of my favorite films. It's also one of my mother's favorite films, and it's also one of my father's favorite films.
I know it.
But I love that movie. And yep. Hank, everyone in that is amazing. Okay, all right. We're going to talk about the movie. So, all right, so I didn't realize – so I forgot that I was going to have two picks in a row. So now I'm a little conflicted. I have like 14 other things written down here. Okay, I'm going to get it. I'm going to go with Happy Gilmore.
Oh,
good one. Happy Gilmore.
Crap, that was
– my cousin Ryan and I, it's not necessarily a great film – but we extracted so much pleasure from that movie, and we probably watched it three times a year together, all through high school and all through undergrad.
Nice. All right, I'm going to go with Scream.
Good pick. Good pick.
All right, Laz, you get two picks.
Okay. So I'm going with The Rock.
Oh, I really was.
It was... one of the few Michael Bay movies that I thought was actually a good movie. It wasn't just the explosions look cool. Sean Connery had the epic line, "Winners go home and fuck the prom queen." Oh, that was our second F-bomb, but whatever.
She was the prom queen. When I was conflicted for my second pick, it was between Happy Gilmore, that, and one other movie. So, like, that was in my top choices.
All right, Laz, what's your next one?
I'm going with another... critically acclaimed movie here, but I'm going with The Cable Guy.
Oh,
yeah, just when Jim Carrey put his nipple up to the window. it's not like a great movie, but I don't know, like, it's just when I saw it, like, it was just hilarious. So it's still a bit spurred in my head.
All right, perfect. I'm going with Trainspotting.
Ooh. Very good pick.
All right. You got two, Lev.
I double down again?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to go Phenomenon.
What? I would not have guessed that.
That movie, and I've seen this movie many, many times, as hokey as the theme is, it is probably one of the most touching movies of that year that I would only put up against Jerry Maguire, my other pick.
Jerry Maguire. Phenomenon has the best shaving scene of 96.
Yeah, that was, oh God, that was like campy for a romance scene. But like, that movie really had a lot of touching humanistic moments, like when he was trying to relate and explain to Forrest Whitaker what it was like being so much smarter now, when Forrest Whitaker is such a very average, simple-lifed person, and the way Robert Redford defended him when he was being alienated and pariahed, and the acceptance. Like, it was, beneath all the silliness, it was such a touching movie.
Robert Redford was in Phenomenon?
Yeah, he was the town doctor who defended him.
What?
Oh, yeah. And he had some great scenes defending him very, very fiercely.
What?
Yep. Maybe you should go watch Phenomenon.
Yeah. Wait. Oh, no, I'm thinking Michael.
No, not Michael. That movie was just garbage.
Man, I mixed him up.
No, Phenomenon is the one where he has the brain tumor and he gets the telekinetic powers and he learns very quickly.
Was there a shaving scene in Michael?
Well, he shaved himself.
Oh, yeah.
But in Phenomenon, Kira Sedgwick shaves John Travolta when he kind of let himself go when he was being alienated.
Which one's Forrest Whitaker in?
Phenomenon. Jeez. Phenomenon. He plays his neighbor.
The 1996 weirdo Travolta films are really. But I did see Phenomenon twice in the theaters, though. I'll give it that.
So I got that and Jerry Maguire are my two, because they're both very, very touching movies.
You got to show people that money.
Yeah.
That's right. If you don't show them money, like, they just won't behave right. Very sweet movie. And that kid was the cutest kid of 1996.
Yeah, man, got them big heads.
Did you know that bees and dogs can smell fear?
Good movie. That's a good one. That's a good one. All right, so I'm – oh, crap. Oh, gosh. So I am going to go with Bottle Rocket.
Wes Anderson. Of course. Anderson. You wrote a whole article about that recently.
Yeah, it's on Movies, Films, and Flicks. Bottle Rocket is Wes Anderson's first film. John, you got your final – Laz, you have your final two picks?
Right. Oof. Yeah. So, okay. So the first of my final two is Space Jam.
Oh, no!
Why wouldn't you want to have Michael Jordan on your team, no matter what it is? Oh, and also, God. Bill Murray.
You got a lot of basketball on your team.
And he was wearing that crazy hat.
Yeah. And let's see. The last one here. I got to do it. There's really no other option. But John Carpenter's Escape from L.A.
No!
Yes!
Oh, for the steal!
Yeah.
That was my fifth pick.
Mark, do you want to trade a second string quarterback and a first round wide receiver for him?
That was my fifth pick.
You know, it wasn't as good as Escape from New York, but whatever. You still got to go with it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
All right. I got to type in 1996 movies here real quick.
I can give you a bunch to choose from there.
Oh, gosh.
There's what?
There are some good ones here, man. Sure. Oh, man.
The Craft, Thinner, Independence Day, Twister, That Thing You Do, The People versus Larry Flint, Striptease, The Ghost in the Darkness, Sleepers.
All right, you know what? No, I was going to make a joke and pick Tremors too, but I'm not going to do it. Oh, gosh. So I'll make the pick within 30 seconds. I just got to.
It's all right. Talk to my thought process. What's going on in that head?
Well, I don't want to pick one I don't love. You know what I mean? Like, I want to pick a movie as my number five pick that I think is, you know, I want to pick something that I love. So I'm trying to think, and I got it. All right. So my last pick.
It's tough. This is tough. I'm actually looking at my remaining choices, and I'm very conflicted. Like, I'm glad I have the extra time to think. Because, like, there are movies that I loved at the time that I don't love as much now, and it makes it – it blurs the lines because you think of how you reacted to it originally. But you want people to vote on your picks, so they have to think how they probably view it now. They're not remembering how you saw it.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Man. It's technical. This is like a real draft.
This is killing me.
It's like a real draft. This is legit.
All right. I am going to go. I'm not happy if I pick that. But I am going to go with, because my picks are all taken. All right. I'm going to pick this movie because I think Bill Murray should have won an Oscar. Hands down. And I think it still holds up. And I'm going to go with Kingpin.
Ooh. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very fun movie, but I'm surprised that's your pick.
Because I just think it features one of the best sports villains ever. So I'm going Kingpin. And you got one pick left, Lev. What are you going to do?
All right. I'm not gonna pick Sleepers because even though it's an amazing film, no one is excited to see Sleepers again.
Yeah, ever. If you see it in a list, you're going to be like, thanks for reminding me, dickhead.
Like, I mean, that movie was amazing, but you don't leave like high-fiving it or smiling while you discuss it. Independence Day was amazing, but it got viewed through a mediocre filter after that last movie. That Thing You Do was amazing back then, but not now.
The Oneaters,
which, okay, this leaves me with three, ready, that I like for very different reasons. It leaves me with The Ghost in the Darkness, The People versus Larry Flint, and The Craft. I think The People versus Larry Flint is an amazing movie, but I'm not going to go advising that on too many people. I'm going to go with The Craft for fun value.
The Craft.
Now, Ghost in the Darkness, if my cousin Ryan is listening, he'll be upset with me because I, and his dad probably watched that movie three or four times, and we loved criticizing their like phantasmal lion hunting abilities. Like, we were like, oh, you idiot. But then we'd watch it again 6 months later.
I mean, I got to, you know, I just want to say up yours, English Patient.
I just want to
tell people that.
Yeah.
You know, I just say, hey, English Patient. Billy Bob Thornton won an Oscar for Sling Blade, so I didn't give it to them. So here's our picks. Lasvath has Fargo, The Rock, Cable Guy.
Did you pick your last one or was that?
Yeah, I got five.
That was my last. Okay. Yeah.
So Laz has Fargo, The Rock, Cable Guy, Space Jam, and Escape from L.A.
That's an interesting movie marathon right there.
Yes. Yep.
That's a very interesting movie marathon. Like, if you watched them all on a Sunday, that's an interesting day. I'd be very curious to know the order.
Yeah. Like, it ends on Fargo. Yeah.
And then I have Swingers, Scream, Trainspotting, Bottle Rocket, and Kingpin. And Levin Good has Birdcage, Happy Gilmore, Phenomenon, Jerry Maguire, and The Craft. I just first and foremost want to say that I am very proud of us at MFF for not going the pretentious route. I think we had fun. You know what I mean? Like, this is a eclectic list, and I think that's very MFF. So go with Laz, Fargo, The Rock, Cable Guy, Space Jam, Escape from LA, Mark, Swinger, Scream, Trainspotting, Bottle Rocket, Kingpin, or Lev, Birdcage, Happy Gilmore, Phenomenon, Jerry Maguire, and The Craft.
And I don't know about you guys, but I went out of my way. In my thought process, I didn't say it when I was on my last pick, but I did not pick any movie out of those five that I would not be thrilled to watch, like, right now.
That's yeah, right. that was kind of my mindset. Like, what movie would I want to watch, like, right now? You know, and Fargo, it's a super depressing movie, but it's also a really great movie. And obviously all the other picks, they're just great, entertaining movies in general.
See, like, those Oscar-winning films are for the people who are trying to rank things. This is about a fun team of movies. So I think Mark, I agree. I think we nailed this. And anyone who's like, you should have picked The English Patient. You know what, that person, I can't believe I'm going to say this, don't listen to our pod.
Well, for one episode.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. If you do say, hey, where's Executive Decision? We're with you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you go, where's Biodome? I go, I understand. Oh, wait. Oh, shoot. Flirting with Disaster was in here. That's a really good movie.
Hey, so Mark, I'm just looking, where's Bordello of Blood?
Oh, brother. You know, I hate to say this.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't have a spot. It doesn't have a spot in my my thing. And I do feel bad for Twister because I really like Paxton and Helen Hunt, but I hate egregious cow killing.
Mm-hmm. We didn't see that cow die.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing's, wait, that, yeah, I guess you're right, but that thing's not going to live.
We heard it mooing and it hadn't struck anything at the time.
Interesting.
Right. I'm just saying, like, they tastefully dealt with that cow's potential demise.
I'm surprised no one picked Jack.
No, a very sweet movie, but, like, I saw it once when it was new. I actually saw it once a couple years ago, and I'm probably good for another 20 years. Like, that's not the kind of movie I want on my list.
And then there's Long Kiss Goodnight. That's a good one. But I'm happy. I'm going through all the 96 films right now, and I'm very happy with mine.
See, I don't think The Long Kiss Goodnight is really that good now.
Interesting.
When I watch that, I enjoy it through the filter of how I enjoyed it so long ago. I don't really enjoy it. If I saw that for the first time today, I don't know if I'd like it.
Interesting. Oh, that's controversial.
Controversial. That's a good note to end the podcast on.
That's right.
But yeah, before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make, guys?
The Lamb. Listen to them. Large Association of Movie Blogs.
Lamb.
Also, guys, head to iTunes if you're a fan of the pod. Rate, review, subscribe. Let us know what you think. Are we on Stitcher?
I don't even know.
Probably. I don't know.
All right, make us one of your favorites on Stitcher. If we're on Google Play, listen to us on Google Play.
We're on a lot of these things.
Yeah, I've found out that we are on a lot of
Did we choose that or did we just end up there? I don't even know how some of this works. I'm happy that it happened.
Yeah, so, you know, Stitcher, you know what I'm saying? But most importantly, guys, iTunes, head over to anything Shark Dropper, rate, review, subscribe. We'd love to kind of build up our numbers. We already have amazing reviews. We have a lot of subscriptions, rating reviews, but we'd love to just kind of hear what you guys think. And also, listener questions. Send us in listener questions. We're happy to answer them. And also, listen to Lazvast's new podcast where he buys blizzards from Dairy Queen and he holds them upside down. And he podcasts about how long they can stay in the cup while upside down.
Longest I got was 4 minutes. Longest I got was 4 minutes.
Yep. I mean, it was a thrilling pod.
It was you know, all the because the ice cream is melting.
Was that four-minute or was that in Florida?
It was it was in Florida, but the AC was broken. So, you know.
Okay. What month?
July.
I mean, yeah, July. And also,
that's really impressive then that it had that fortitude.
I know there's a little bit of a break because in the last one he dropped a blizzard on top of his equipment and it short-circuited everything. Which, you know, what in the extreme world of Dairy Queen blizzard holding upside down stuff. You don't know where your gear is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like anything could happen.
Exactly.
So just wait.
Listen, you know? I knew what I was getting myself into. I've read the horror stories.
Yep.
So I was prepared to lose equipment.
Go on Stitcher and listen to his Dairy Queen upside down blizzard pod.
It's a hoot. All right, guys. I think that does it for a podcast. It was a pretty good podcast. All right.
All right. Well, I guess we'll keep doing them then. Cool.
Yeah. I think we might. I think we might do this again.
Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah.
I guess you know what is it? This is like 72 episodes now. I guess we can kick off the training wheels now, huh?
That's right.
Well, let's not get carried away here.
For the next pod, guys, can we talk about John Travolta's shaving scenes?
Oh, please do. Let's please.
I don't know. I don't know why we wouldn't. I feel like if I go in my long queue of listener questions that are waiting to be fulfilled in podcasts, I probably have two just on that topic. All
right. And the final plug I have is from a scene in the Leslie Nielsen classic Spy Hard, where someone goes up to him and goes, "When I'm done with you, you're going to look like Swiss cheese." And he goes, "That's no Gouda."
Oh,
nice. All right, guys. Oh. All right. I don't know what to say, so let's just end the podcast right now. For my co-host, Mark Hopmar.
Stitcher.
John Lovegood.
Ronda Rousey.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.